Espresso. I do believe I finally found the honey jar I've been looking for. Yes, it's
up on the tree. I'll bounce it in for you.
Woo-hoo. No bother.
Coming up on Espresso Coffee Talk.
For me, that's the biggest... Because I just want to walk over and smack him and go, you have no concept of what you're talking about. Because how do you move on? How? I mean, there's no way. I have found certain folks work through it faster, it seems, and other folks never get through it.
Okay. The following episode is sponsored by listeners like you. If you would like to sponsor or donate, please visit espressocoffeetalk.com. That's espressocoffeetalk.com.
Website probably isn't real.
The one thing about grieving is that there is no manual for it. Everybody grieves in their own unique way. And if you're on the outside looking in, well, it's a different story. How do you help somebody grieve when you don't know what they're going through? How do you help somebody get through what they're going through? How do you help somebody see light in the darkness? I asked Dan and his wife, Kim, both to come on and talk about their struggles, things that they have seen. And this is what we came up with. So sit back and enjoy the show. Well, I have on the show today a couple of very special guests. The first one, he's been on a bazillion times before. But the reason is I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel. So everybody, please welcome Dan back to the show.
Oh, jeez. Scraping the bottom of the barrel. Yes, that's where I deserve to be. Well, I'm glad to be back because it's been a while, doggone it.
It has. But once again, just like every other time in between podcasts, a lot has happened. A lot's happened with me and a lot's happened with you.
Y'all.
Very true. Anyway, so today, speaking of a lot happening, we're going to talk about the whole concept of grieving, kind of from more of a general sense. And we can talk about experiences too if we need to. But I want to dive into it from a general sort of general kind of idea behind it. And part of the reason I asked you to come on, Dan, is because you, when you and I reconnected back in, I think, 2012, you were working for a funeral home, and part of your job was working with families to sort of do the funeral planning and getting headstones. But it wasn't always just pre-planning. I mean, it was sometimes planning on the spot because somebody had passed away and they were trying to get things planned. It was unexpected or whatever. And so you've had to deal with those kind of families too. And so in the process, some of those families are right in the heart of grieving and trying to navigate that whole process. So I want to kind of pick your brain about kind of that grieving process, what you have seen as people have come, as people have gone, some of the things that you've had to deal with and help families navigate through, and kind of what you see in the midst of the grieving process. So let's just start with kind of some of the general experiences that you've had in that place.
Well, yeah, I was in, I think, the cemetery funeral business for 12, 15 years. I don't know. It gets to be a blur after a while. Mm-hmm. And each person coming in, and I'm going to deal mostly with folks that were, we call them at need, which means there was a death that just happened. And so they're either coming in to plan for someone else, or they're planning for that loved one. So it kind of went around, but they all kind of shared the same thing. They've lost a loved one. Mm-hmm. And so each one had their own, kind of how they all did it. I never walked in. Oh, I guess I did. When it came to the grieving, you can go through the five stages of grieving that you know, people go through when it comes to losing something in life. But pretty much what I noticed was you had two scopes of people. One where it was very unexpected. Mm-hmm. This was something that shook their life up immediately. And so they were coming in pretty much unprepared for anything. They, in a sense, they didn't have any of the funeral home stuff done. They had nothing of the cemetery done. Usually only go through it maybe once or twice. There are a few out there that have gone through it more, which I don't know how they make it through it, but they do. And so they're coming in just totally, what do we do? I mean, they're walking through, and I call autopilot. The funeral directors, normally what happened was the funeral directors in the funeral home, which I worked with, I was over the cemetery, would go through all the funeral planning, mm-hmm. caskets and all the stuff prepping for the services and visitations. From there, they would come out to the funeral, if they were going to be buried at the cemetery I worked at. Then they would come out and it was, you know, because now what happens is they're worn out. Usually it's all one day. They'll go to the funeral home. Usually they'll come over immediately afterwards to the cemetery. So by the time you get to the cemetery, I mean, they're totally frazzled. So you get to see it just weighs so heavily on them. Right. So now they're having to pick out, well, where do you want to, you know, what space do you want? The cemetery is huge. So do you have other loved ones out here? You know, where do you want to be? And different options when it comes to where do you want to lay this loved one? Mm-hmm. And then you get into vaults and what kind of vaults you want. And then it also got into sometimes the discussion of the headstone and what do you want for the monument. It's mind-boggling, especially when you're totally unprepared. Right. And it's a different scope on that. Then you had the second folks who had all their planning done. They had a space out there. They had their funeral planning done. It still weighed heavily on them, but they were able to walk through it a little easier just because they weren't making all the decisions all at once. Still very tough. They're still facing reality that we're going to bury my loved one here.
Right.
Then it becomes it comes fresh because, Lord, this is really happening. But they're not having to make all the decisions all at once. Mm-hmm. And so walking with those families, watching those families. And again, you're walking, I mean, you have to remain professional, but you also have the human side of you that, you know, you're feeling, especially when it came to a child or a loved one or a teen or something. Oh my gosh, those were just.
So yeah. did you see a lot of that?
A lot of the young ones?
Yeah.
I hate to say a lot. I saw quite a few, yes.
Well, more than you wanted to.
Throughout the years. Yeah, I mean, one's bad enough. You know, I can't count. I mean, I can remember certain families that come in there because, you know, whether one, they just walked in there, something happened, an accident happened, they were sick, but they didn't think they were going to happen. You know, it was going to happen, cancer, whatever. So, yeah, walking through those families. So I can still remember some of those families, especially when they came to designing the stone for that child, because I would then piece it together and you begin to ask questions. What did they like? What would you like on there? And in a sense, to kind of bring out so when you walk by that stone, you can get a little reflection of what this person's interest was. So I can still remember those. Oh yeah, never easy. And right. But then you start finding out about. You know, my whole thing was tell me more about who this little treasure is that you're having to, in a sense, bury. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get to know a little flavor of who they were and what they did. And I did that not just with the children, but with all, even adults and folks who knew it was coming and even,
sure, yeah,
you know, spouses. So,
yeah, I remember that when we had come into the like whatever room that was, and sat there and we're just sort of waiting for somebody to come in. I remember thinking,
yeah,
wouldn't it be, because I thought, I know Dan works here. Wouldn't it be funny if he was the one that came in? And we hadn't spoken at that time in years.
Yeah, it had been years, yes.
So,
yeah.
So we're sitting there going, and then all of a sudden you walk in. But, and it was, I think for me, in understanding that, you know, there was somebody familiar there to help out and somebody familiar who could laugh and make it a little bit easier. And, but that process, I can remember that, even that was daunting, just sitting there and going through and, you know, trying to figure out the headstone, trying to figure out what we could do, what we couldn't do, because he was on, was it Medicaid? Yeah. And so they had that whole, well, this is kind of like the guidelines for Medicaid. And, so just going through all of that process, but, somebody like you very much made it easier. I wonder, when it comes to maybe that grieving process, or because again, you're right, there's a lot of people seem to be in autopilot, but then there's those people who are just beside themselves. And so I'm wondering from you, what's the most daunting question that you've been asked?
Oh gosh, the daunting questions, the most, each one, well, I'm trying to figure out, most of it is we're trying to make sense of it. The problem with death, most of the time you cannot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, could I have had more time? Why did it have to happen right now? Mm-hmm. Could I have done something different? Mm-hmm. So each one of those, again, is there one question? Not really. It really comes down when they're young. That's when it comes down to, it's a raw emotion.
Right.
Could we have done something different? I can't believe we're having to walk through this. I thought we'd have more time. Mm-hmm. You know, and there a lot of times as this, because it was so raw, I would start it, especially when it came towards young children. Hey, if there's a moment, because I said, you've been through this. You've gone through the funeral. You've done the funeral planning. So now we're getting into the, in a sense, the last stages, the nitty gritties of this stuff. And if all of a sudden this all collapses upon you, just let me know and I'll step out. And that happened quite a few times. It would just be overwhelming because now they're realizing this is really happening.
Right.
So again, when you go through autopilot, you're kind of in this fog until all of a sudden the fog kind of breaks and you're kind of going, you can see the reality check come in. Mm-hmm. So there really wasn't one question. It was more of, they just couldn't believe, especially when they're young, that we're having to bury, you know, my brother, my sister, our child. The problem is death has no discrimination against any age. It's going to happen to all of us.
Right.
You just hope you have more time. So I can't really pull out one question. Again, it just came down to, I think they wish they had more time. Mm-hmm. And again, it's, they're lost in this weird dimension and trying to figure it out. What, you know, in a sense, what? How do we handle this? What do we do? Mm-hmm. Well, there's no answer for that. There right. is just not. There is no answer. Simple answer for what you're going through. And most of my guys, I don't know. I mean, yeah, they would ask, and you've done this a lot. Yeah, yeah. Each one's different. Each one's fresh. Mm-hmm. Each experience is different. But in a sense, they're trying to search answers through all this, and they can't find them.
Yeah.
And in the end, there is no answer to it. There just isn't. You're lost in this fog for a while, and again, some folks are able to work their way through the fog, and some never do, as they trot through this chasm of death that just swallows all up. So
yeah. So let's, because in previous episodes, you have also brought up, basically you've gone through this in a roundabout way, of having somebody close to you pass away and sort of the effect that it had on you. Maybe talking about grieving from that end of it. What kinds of things did you notice going through that process? And maybe the question for people out there, because this is more of a personal thing, is have you fully come through that grieving and healing process?
Yeah, again, I have not. The funny thing is, they're really not funny. It's just I have not had anyone in my family close to me die. Mom and dad still live. Brothers and sisters still live. But I was in youth ministry for 15 years, and one of my places in California, a family. Well, him and I were close. Alex, anyway, got leukemia. And the end, there was no way. And so I was there the day he died. Mm-hmm. So you're watching this child in front of you. And I'm not going to go through it here, but in a sense, watching where I walk in and talk to him, and within a half hour, not knowing, he died. Mm-hmm. As I'm sitting there. So when you're, all I remember is that was raw. I mean, I remember sitting there, and then you're lost. You're not sure. You kind of lose concept of where you're at, what's going on. You just can't believe it. Mm-hmm. And I remember going home and I bawled. Oh my gosh. And probably for 2 hours. I mean, just absolutely lost it. I just remember getting in bed and just crying for hours. You know, I take a break, then I cry more. It's amazing how death just, it grapples with all of us. My outcome of that was kind of shock, you know, because they've been battling with it. We were in church work, doing a lot, you know, all the prayers and all the stuff, praying for healing, and that did not happen. Mm-hmm. On my journey of it, that was the beginning of a slide in my faith. Because I didn't understand how could God not answer those prayers and heal this young kid. Because he was just a delight. So for me, it really began a dark cycle in my life. And I still continued in church work for the next probably 12 years after that. But it never left me. And still doesn't. That's the crazy thing about death. And I would tell families that as they would go through this is, you're going to bury your loved one. But I said, you're going to have moments in time, and that's what I called them, where you're going to think everything's somewhat back to normal, and a sight, a smell, a light, something will trigger this back on. You're back in it like it just happened.
Yeah.
I said, and you're thinking, and you think you're going to go insane. And I said, you're not. It's just, this is what death does. And that's what it did to me. Mm-hmm. And I still have those moments as I'm, you know, talk to people and they're going through this or they've talked about it and we lost this, we did this. It puts me right back in Alex's presence.
Yeah.
And watching that process. So can I go through the different, did I go through all the different stages? Oh, I don't know. I mean, we can get into this. Grieving is grieving, and it lasts. You can grieve again, even though it's 40 years away from the event. You can still grieve again. It's just so shocking. And the problem is, you want answers and you can't get them.
Yeah.
And that's where I was stuck. I wanted answers and I couldn't get them. And again, that really affected my relationship with God, my relationship with other folks, it just had a profound, death does. Death has a profound impact on anybody who's going through it.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest detriment of it. It just, it reshaped me in not such a good way for many a decades. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just a year. It reshaped me in not a good way. Yeah. And eventually, I was able to work through it. But, you know, it's still with me. It's still there.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah.
I don't, yeah. It's been, well, I mean, and you know this personally, but for the listeners, I think for me, I'm kind of where, maybe a little bit where you were with Alex, in that somebody very close to me lost their child just a couple of weeks ago. But it's that point of going, I knew this child, my own little investment in this child, and it was absolutely nothing in comparison to a parent's investment, but it was an investment. And you just, you start to wonder, like, what the heck here? You know, did something go wrong? Did we do something wrong? And this is like punishment, you know, is this, what's the reasoning behind this? And it's, you try to think of the positives, but all of those other influential thoughts just start coming in, and you're wondering, you want to know why, you want to know the answers, just like you're saying. So I get it from that point, but you now, have also, and not blood family, but your wife has recently lost a child. And that has been another sort of hurdle, big hurdle to kind of navigate and cross.
Yeah, it's, again, death has no boundaries. And I'll let my wife speak to that, because that was her kid. If she wants to, that's up to her. But yeah, I mean, it. Did we know it was going to happen? Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was one of these things where we're not going to get into the history of it. But yeah, after that, then you got grandkids, and who's going to raise them?
Sure.
Well, we are. Mm-hmm. So you go through this. And her daughter, Lacey. Oh, yeah, we get along. She picked on me all the time. I mean, I still, yeah, missed her. You know, every time I'd see her, she'd go, "Hello, Daniel." Every time, Daniel. And she just had this quirky sense of humor. And you miss that. I mean, was I super close to her? No. But there were certain things that, you know, when it came towards the divorce, getting with Kim, and Lacey was instrumental in saying, you know what, he's part of the family and he deserves to be part of the function of here. And she took it upon herself to make sure I, my wife's shaking her head, making sure that if we ain't going to do this, if Dan's not going to be there, then we're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. So she was instrumental in that. So, yeah. It was shocking, but not shocking. It was one of those things you're kind of going, oh, yeah. You just, again, no matter what, you're still never prepared for it. Yeah. But again, you know, I can let, that really comes on to Kim, whether she wants to share. But, you know, how a parent deals with the death of a child, each one handles it different. But Kim just seemed to, at that point, you know, I've always asked her, how do you make it? She goes, well, I put all my time and energy into those grandkids. And boy, has she put the time and energy into those grandkids. Mm-hmm. Right, Kim?
Just for me, it was, I have to move on. I've got another job here and the girls need me. And so therefore, there was no choice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think that's part of it too, is when you almost, I don't want to say forced, but you are kind of forced, for a lack of a better word, to put your best foot forward and just go. But both of you kind of have, I mean, and Dan, even you have seen, now it's not now I'm not helping some strange family try and navigate their grief and get something that I'm going to see them for a little bit and then that's it. Now you're trying to help somebody else who's very close to you in this grieving process and standing right by their side, and you're seeing grief from a different angle as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, has it made us stronger? I mean, Kim and I have always had a very strong relationship since the get-go. And we've worked, I mean, she's been my rock and strength. So the crazy thing was, she's a very strong personality. She is very independent. Now, was I a help? I don't know. Was I? I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And, well, you were also the punching bag. You took a lot. There were times that he was trying to help and just hit a raw nerve, and it was like, got his head bit off, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, again, it's part of that grieving, the anger, the frustration as you're going through this. But again, our relationship, I would say, has deepened in a different way as we're going through this.
But you can see where it destroys marriages. I can easily see that because each person doesn't grieve the same way. Men and women don't grieve the same way. A lot of men tend to just keep it in internally. Women want to vocalize, and there ends up, there's a barrier.
Yeah, we never let that barrier. We've had our moments through all this stuff. Because, again, we're walking through this path. You know, we get together. We're making some plans, just the two of us. We're doing small trips here and there. We kind of set our sights on, okay, we're going to enjoy. Because, again, here's what I told folks as you're going through this. I saw so many people who said, okay, we're going to do all this stuff. We're going to wait till we're 65, retire, and then we're going to do all this stuff. They retire, and one dies within a year. So they didn't do anything. They worked and worked and worked with the prospect of when we retire, we'll go do it. And next thing you know, one of them's dead. So I just told her, I said, I don't care if we go broke. We are going to enjoy, and we have. I mean, we have really, we took the opportunity when it was just the two of us. We did a lot of things. So that also built our relationship. So we've had a bit of a struggle because then we had to say, all right, now we're sacrificing in a different way by raising two grandkids. And again, I'm married into this thing. So,
right.
Even though they accept me as that, it's still, I'm married into this thing. I'm kind of going along with it. And so there's been some tension here and there when you start thinking, all right, we're going to end up retiring. We're having a good time now. We're going to set our plans ahead. And then, like always, things go in the crapper.
Right.
So we've had to make some major adjustments, and some of them have been fine and some of them have not been. But again, we've never given up on each other. But Kim's right. Marriages can end in a second like this. We just didn't let it do that.
Right.
I mean, and we still have one left in the nest. One is in college, second year. But we still have one that's probably going to be with us for another 3 or 4 years, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're not done yet. And it's not been a bed of roses. The problem with roses is there's also thorns. Right. So there's always thorns in the midst of the bed of roses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've sacrificed a lot since then.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. And it's funny because of our views. And I understand you're not saying sacrifice in a bad way, but to me, it's not sacrificing. So it's kind of different how men and women.
It is, yeah. And to tell the audience, you know, I was one of those people when I was growing up and finally got my first marriage. And this is, I'm not just going to go on. I never really got into the kid thing, never wanted kids, even though some are, I have two adopted children. I never was into the family thing. And Kim is totally opposite of this. She is family, family, family. So we're still working through that because, yeah, how I say a thing is how she sees things is different. So, and death just compounds things. It can make them better or it can make them worse.
Right.
And I always tell folks that in the midst of death, it's the either the best or the worst is going to come out. It's just that's what death does. So are we still working through it? Oh, yeah. We still are, but we've never ever given up on each other, and that's part of the. When you're going through this with families, I always told folks, hang on there, because you're going to need those people. And I always told them also, I said, when you're going through the funeral and the cemetery plan, you're on autopilot. I said, what's going to happen is when this all ends and you finally put that loved one in the grave or whatever you're going to do with them, I said, everyone else is going to go back to normal. You are not.
Right.
You will not. You're in a new bizarre norm that will not end. You'll get number as the years get on, but you'll never get over it. So, you know, Kim and I, it's been 2.5 years, 3 years?
Three years.
It still blows our mind that it's been 3 years, because this seems like, for me, just yesterday. I mean, it does. It just seems like yesterday. I mean, we do Florida trips. I still remember Lacey grabbing me and said, we need to go out and do stuff. She would grab me when we go, because Kim wouldn't go out in the tide. Yeah, Lacey did. Looking for
conch shows.
Looking for conch shows. And Lacey loved it. So her and I would get on the boogie boards and get out there and do our thing. And so there was just, yeah, there was a different relationship that Lacey and I had. And I missed that. So, but it's been 3 years. But again, it really seems like just a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's, death plays that weird,
sure,
weird game with you when it comes to that.
Sure. I think probably too, maybe going back to the sacrifice thought, I think the sacrifice comes in the idea of normal. When you're talking about what normal should have been, now we're sacrificing that because it's a new normal and we're having to rewrite normal and we're having to rework normal. And in that regard, it's a sacrifice. But I see what you're saying, Kim, is going, but on the other hand, this is what I get to do. I get to invest in my grandkids. I get to love on them. I get to, you know, provide a pathway for them to grow, and that's not a sacrifice. That's just an act of love.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that on both ends of that. But now let's talk about when it comes to grieving, because you kind of hit it a little earlier, is that people grieve in different ways. People, and by the way, just for the audience, grieving doesn't just have to come with death. I mean, grieving can come with any sort of change in life, any sort of time where something happens that you have lost what was, and now you have to create something that now is, and it's different than what you had planned, or it's different than what you were hoping for, or whatever. Maybe it's family drama. Maybe it's you know, new job. Maybe it's whatever. But grieving can come in all different forms for all different reasons. But I want to dive into now the fact that people grieve in different ways. And what are some, we're going to call them big no's when it comes to dealing with somebody and grieving. What are some of the things that you have noticed that people have done that you're like, oh my, cringe factor. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the cringe factor for me would be, again, like you said, people grieve in their own way. And the thing with grieving is, yeah, they always hit the stages of grieving. And I agree, you can go through all of them, you can go through one of them. Grieving will hit you the rest of your life. We're going to talk death here, but it could be other things. You're still, because your body and your memories and your everything, how you're wired, you still remember the time you had with that. And sometimes you're smiling and laughing, and other times you're you're just in great misery again. So grieving that loss of that loved one will last the rest of your life. I just told folks, you get number. In a sense, you kind of find ways to work around it or through it, but it's still there. When people walk up and say, you just need to move on. Oh, for me, that's the biggest, because I just want to walk over and smack them and go, you have no concept of what you're talking about. Because how do you move on? How? I mean, there's no way. I have found certain folks work through it faster, it seems, and other folks never get through it. I've seen both spectrums. A lot of times when it came towards the grieving and how folks did, if it was cancer, Alzheimer's, things that they were grieving long before. They were grieving long before when they knew this was happening or they watched the progression and the downward progression of their loved one. They were grieving all the way through it. And for them, at the end, it was a sense of relief. They're not suffering anymore. They're now no longer in pain. But to have someone walk up and say, you just need to move on. Really? Yeah. Oh, that just it ticked me off.
Right.
Because you can't move on from that.
Yeah.
You can still work through it and deal with your emotions, but you're never going to just move on.
Right. Well, I think people now are people who have lost a loved one are afraid that I think some are actually afraid of the notion of moving on, that they'll be forgotten or their memory will be forgotten or their whatever will be forgotten. And I think other people don't understand that grieving really is just, it's an act of love because it's, you've lost that love, or you've lost that person, and that love in your heart now has a void because you can't just freely give that love to that person anymore. They're gone, but you still love them.
Yeah, you do. And you just have those memories. Yeah, you have those memories and those thoughts that are still there that, again, you relive them.
Right.
Again, becomes fresh again. And again, the grieving comes back up again.
Sure.
Because you're still going, I still can't believe it. So, right.
And it will look however it will look. The grieving.
Right.
When it comes back again, it will look however it will look. Might be strong, might not be as strong. Who knows?
Right. Just because you're getting number and you're kind of the years on, and you maybe think, oh, I've lost. No, no, no. It's just you have other things that are kind of filling those cracks in, and it's helping you get through it. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I always told folks when it comes to that, don't let anybody ever come up and tell you how you should grieve.
Right.
Or you should move on. You're going to grieve in your own way. Mm-hmm. And or people that come up and say, oh, I've been through the exact same thing. Well, yes and no. You may have lost, you may have lost a loved one or a child, but the circumstances for each person is totally different.
Right.
And their emotional state and how they handle things is totally different. Now, I understand what they're trying to say. I get what they're trying to say. They're trying to share a little compassion there and hopefully find a little common ground. So I get a bit of understanding. Because maybe, and through this, it's hopefully, as you're going through this, if you find someone else that has faced that death too, they may have a little bit of wisdom that they've learned that may help, or they may still be searching for answers, and you may offer them some solace as they're going through this.
Right.
But I just tell folks, don't let people tell you how to grieve. You're going to grieve in your own way. And again, like I said, there's certain folks that we have certain folks that would go home within the next week and clean out the closet. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, that was their way of their closure. Other folks never get rid. I mean, the bedroom or whatever becomes the trophy room of who that person is, mm-hmm. because they just, for them to close that door would mean I'm now gonna, I'm gonna move on.
Right.
Well, so I just tell folks, you do it in your own way, and don't let anybody else tell you how to do it.
Right. Right. But, and when you're going through the hard stuff, that it's okay. That's valid.
It's all right. Yeah.
Because I think people, here's one thing that I've noticed is that there are other people who will latch on to the that feeling, that loss. Like somebody loses a child, other people around that person who knew that child will latch on to that loss and sort of take ownership over that loss. And then what happens is that person who didn't have near the investment as the parent will heal and they'll find the positive, right? And then,
yep.
Then they'll look at the parent and expect the same out of them. Well, I lost that person too, and I have found the positive, and I found the hope, and I found the whatever. Now you should too. And there's that frustrating part with other people who are trying to say, you know, you need to rise up and get out of this funk and whatever and move forward. And no, it's not valid to do it that. I mean, if you found hope and positive, great. But this was my loss. This was my child. And, you know, or this was my loved one, my parent, my whoever. And I'm going to deal with this in the process that just happens.
Yeah. And I was, it's all right when you're walking through this. If your faith and begin to question, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. God has big enough arms to let you do this. Because mm-hmm. I did it for decades to the point almost denying him completely. And did God ever run away? No, he gave me the space. He didn't like it. But he says, all right, if that's what it's going to take, all right. Now, did God ever give up on me? No. And it's the same way with other people. Mm-hmm. It's never giving up on them. It's helping them the best you can. Because the problem with death is you can get lost in the darkness. Mm-hmm. And it can become all-consuming. Then it can become an issue. At that point, counseling or something to help you get so you can see a little light in the midst of the darkness. Mm-hmm. But as you're... I'm trying to think the path I was going down on this one, but it's all right. You're okay as you're going through this stuff. It's just don't get lost. Don't get... Because, again, death is going to try to swallow you up.
Right.
Sometimes. Not all the time. It's just making sure you have a light in the midst of that, that you don't get totally lost in it. Because mm-hmm. it can become all-consuming.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kim, have you heard anything through any grieving process that you're like, oh, I just want to strangle them?
I don't know. I mean, they had a two-bedroom apartment, and we moved basically everything into our house, mm-hmm. in our spare room, in our basement, in our garage, in our shed. And, you know, and Dan was very patient with it. But after a year, he was kind of like, we've got to do something with some of this stuff. And, I was like, I want to go through every bit of it, every piece. So, you know, it kind of set me off. And mm-hmm. so he pulled back, and then this past summer, because it was so hot and we had a lot of it stored in our basement, we've never had a problem. Well, the humidity was like 86% down there, and I was afraid, okay, now everything's going to mold. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went down there and it was like, oh my Lord. You know, I guess it was 3 years and it was finally an eye opener. It's like, holy crap, all this stuff. And so it was overwhelming, but I spent 3 days and I just did just three solid days and just went through all of it. And, but it was, you know, at the time that he was trying to help, and he was trying to help, but I guess I wasn't ready.
No, she wasn't ready. And I remember we were out in the garage, and again, the biggest thing of this I told folks is you've got to, you know, regardless, you need to listen. The best thing when you're going through, the best advice to give folks when you're going through death is just shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And sometimes silence is golden. So I was pushing that, and you could, all of a sudden she goes, I forget how she put it, in a sense, I'm going to lose Lacey again, in a sense, in that sense. I'm going to give all her stuff away, and then I'm not going to have any memories. And I went, oh, there's the raw bone. There it is right there. The raw nerve is now. I went, whoa, I just did what I've told folks never to do.
Right.
And at that point, what did I do? I went, okay, she's not ready. And at that point, I backed off. I apologized. I think I did, didn't I?
Yep.
Okay. Apologized. And I said, you just need, when you're ready, that's fine. I'll deal with it. I mean, I'm a neatnik, and I hate clutter. Mm-hmm. So that was just my bonehead move.
Sure.
Just because of who I am and how I'm wired.
Yeah.
And again, it took something like humidity that she finally went down there and went, holy crap. I have to do it. And then it just kind of flowed. And she got with her, you know, got with her oldest, and they went through all the stuff, and they did a lot of laughing. And I'm sure there were some tears in the midst of this. And oh, I remember this, and that's that hat, or this is this thing right here. And oh my gosh, she had so many pocket purses. Oh my Lord, out the wazoo. I forget what, shoes. I was like, oh my gosh. So you start feeding, and then you find little trinkets that bring back a smile or a tear that you're going, like, I didn't know that there was a hat down there. And she goes, oh my gosh, Lacey wore this hat. Now, could anybody pull this hat off? No, Lacey did. Lacey pulled that hat off. Because now Kim would, now I think Kim could wear it. And now Lisa doesn't want it, right? No, yeah. She doesn't want it. So, but they
wear hats.
No, so the hat's going to stay here. And it's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because it's like, sure. Lacey pulled that off as Lacey would.
As Lacey would. But going back to that, that thought process of I think it's okay. And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's natural and okay to have that person beside you who's maybe going to push the boundaries a little bit to see, okay, where are we at in this grieving process? And if I went too far, ooh, well then I went too far. Take a step back, apologize, and you move on. But the pressing of the boundaries, I think, is almost, in a way, I mean, yeah, there's the push and the pull and the raw nerve and all that stuff. But in the ultimate grand scheme of things, it's sort of healthy to have that boundary pushed just to see exactly where you're at in this. You know, are you healing? Are you still at step one? And if you are, okay.
Yeah, this is how marriages can fall apart. But yeah,
as long as you know when to stop. And,
right.
You know, because if he hadn't have stopped, then it would have been a whole. Yeah.
Well, that just becomes the annoying little kid pressing buttons then.
Yeah, it's very much so. And I'm a little kid, yes. Exactly, yes. Yeah, that's very much so. So it's when you have, you've got to have, again, this is how we can see marriages ending in a second.
Right.
Because you have two folks that may see things totally different and how they want to handle it. So as you're going through this, it's the communication and reading the signs in this, going, okay, wait. I pushed too far.
Right.
And so I won't push again. Now, did I remind her here and there? Yeah, but I didn't push it.
Yeah.
I didn't push it like I did. I just went, hey, can we just take one box at a time and see what's in there? You know, it was just little pushes. Are we ready yet?
Right.
And if she said no, then it was like, okay.
Right. And I think that's what that's probably more what I meant. Probably didn't articulate that well, but by sort of pushing those boundaries is that you're really just seeing, are we ready? Are we not? And if we're not, then we need to be okay with that. Instead of,
yeah, because in the midst of it, yeah, it becomes a loss. And when it comes out, what'll pop out is if they're not ready, the anger pops out.
Right.
The anger and the frustration of the loss. That's what begins. And then you have to, that's where the sign, okay, I just need to shut up and back off.
Yeah.
And let the anger diffuse because it's still raw. And again, I had to put myself in there. I haven't lost someone. Right. I'm dreading that.
Yeah.
And I am. I'm dreading. I keep telling Kim, you cannot die. I don't know how many times I told her, you cannot die. And so somehow you're going to have to figure out how you're going to live. And so I die first.
Yeah.
But it's understanding, again, that's all the grieving part. Each person grieves differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to understand is some folks are ready to move on to the next step and some folks are not. And you have to be willing to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should that go on for decades and decades? Well, maybe not. But again, communication becomes a key part of it.
Right. Well, I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier, but you can get lost in it.
Oh, yeah, you can get lost. I mean, I did. I got lost in the darkness in the trying to understand. And again, the key concept is people want answers, and they can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
If I had been there, if I had done this, if we had said this, if we, it's the coulda, shoulda, woulda. And people get lost in that darkness.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, if you can work your way through that, you're going to just walk into the fog and some gray areas.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you let it totally consume you.
Right.
That becomes a danger. And you really get lost in the grief.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you let the grief control you instead of you working through the grief.
Right.
That's the danger.
Right. And that's where you get to those points where it doesn't matter what anybody says or, you know, tries to communicate or whatever. It just, nothing's going to be right. You're going to be in the darkness and it's going to be hard to be pulled out of that. I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's going to be hard.
Yeah. And there are many times, my mom's dad and many people I saw at the cemetery,
mm-hmm.
Especially older folks mm-hmm. who had such a close relationship. The loved one dies, and within a year or two, they're dead. Why? They got lost in the darkness, and they completely died because of loneliness.
Yeah.
They missed that loved one so much, they died of a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
It happens not all the time, but it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it, that broken heart, I mean, it just, they get lost and they get totally consumed by it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Sure.
But that's when you cannot completely get out of it. Again, my grandpa, I knew him, but I didn't know him. My grandpa Howard, his wife died of pancreatic cancer, I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, what did mom say? It wasn't a year or two after that. He had a stroke. It wasn't just a stroke. He died of a broken heart. He never could come back to reality.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't make any more of his life because he lost the one he loved.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Right.
It's just when you're younger, yeah, you can, your whole life can get swallowed up on that black hole in a second. That's when people need to be aware of, okay, we need to help, because the grieving has taken over them.
Right. Right. And I think maybe this is the other side of the marriage thing too, is that, you know, let's say a woman is grieving and she's so caught up in grief, and the husband is doing his best to move forward. I think sometimes the husband fears that he's going to lose the wife too in that process.
Yeah, that,
you know.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah. And so they make, sometimes they make good choices, sometimes they make bad choices.
Yeah.
But again, that's where the cracks in the marriage, if there, here's what death does. If there were some cracks in the marriage before the death, I guarantee you, if you don't fix those cracks, they're going to become chasms.
Sure.
Because death, again, either brings out the best and worst in you. So if you're, sometimes death begins to fill in those cracks and you begin to rely on each other, mm-hmm. and realize I can't make it without you. Other times, it just, it's an earthquake, mm-hmm. and the chasm just breaks loose.
Yeah.
And it's not the fault of either one of them.
Right.
Then the blame game begins. It's just death. Again, the grieving can cause a huge separation with anybody.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and you got to be aware of that.
Yeah. What's interesting is I'm sitting here as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking there are going to be folks who listen to this and go, yeah, totally can relate. Then there are going to be folks who listen to this and go, yeah, that's not how it worked for us.
Yep.
It's just amazing how different and how vast each situation can be and each grieving process can be. And the fact that you can go through denial and acceptance and denial and then acceptance and then whatever else, those different processes of grieving. And then it can happen. It can be very easy process. It can be a super hard process. And everybody who's listening to this is either going to go, yes, I align with that, or no, I don't.
Yeah, because things in life, there's a lot of things in life you can fix. If your car breaks down, you fix it.
Yep.
If your phone breaks down, you can replace it. So there's a, you can fix it. Death, you can't fix.
Nope.
You can't just pull out a tool and go, wait, I can fix that real quick.
Right.
It can be fixed. It is the ultimate end.
Yep.
And we, as humans, are trying to figure out why, or how can I have fixed it? Mm-hmm. And there really is no answer to that. And that's where you have folks coming on different spectrums, because that's just how life is. You can't fix that. The problem with death is it's 100%. There isn't only, you know, well, 90% of us will face this and that 10% won't. No, 100% of us, there is no escaping this. And for me, you know, Alex and Lacey and other folks, and as I get older, you just go, crap, that time's coming. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I'm 62 and it's hard to face it going, okay, I am, you know, I got maybe 20 or 30 more years at the most. Mm-hmm. Then I'm gone. But somehow Kim, being the nurse she is, figures out how to keep me going. Oh, that's how, what you can do. Yes.
She's kind of secretly celebrating. She's going, when he goes. No,
okay. Thank goodness another 20 years that guy will be gone. But yeah, we always wish we could fix it, and you can't.
Right.
It's 100% of us are going to face this, and it's daunting. Mm-hmm. You just, I mean, especially when they're younger, I wish they would have had more time, or I didn't have enough time. You just go through the, you bat it back and forth. So yeah, you're going to have different folks with different spectrum of this, because death reacts, each of us react to death differently. It's just, we all have to face it.
Right. Yep, that's true. And I think if I were to kind of bring all this around, I think what I would want to tell people is that it's okay to grieve. It's okay to be in that place of hurt. It's okay to be in that place of questioning. It's okay to be in that place of doubting faith. It's okay to be in that place of wanting to know why. All of that, every aspect of that is okay. Don't lose yourself in it. Like what Dan has been saying, don't lose yourself in it, but it's okay. And if you can find the people who will come alongside of you, because I just keep thinking, going back and regardless if it's a real story or not, who cares? But you go back to the story of Job and you go, his friends, they sat with him for 7 days or whatever it was, and he was silent. And then Job finally just started, he started rolling off of his tongue all of these thoughts. And they're battling with him on those thoughts. It's like, guys, shut up. Just listen. Yeah. But they don't. They keep going, right? And that's the big thing. And then by the end of the whole story, God's not mad at Job. And Job, remember, is the guy doubting his, not really doubting his faith so much, but he's questioning. He's asking God, why? What did I do wrong? What do you have against me? And on and on and on. But by the end of it, God's not mad at Job. He's mad at Job's friends. So for the people out there who know somebody who's grieving, shut up. I don't know what else to say, but
it's good to go in, when you're going with them. Sometimes you go to the household where, and just sit there and just be there.
Yeah.
Just be there. They don't need you to say anything.
Right.
This is where people come up, and I have no problem with the saying, but everyone, I'm so sorry. Why do they say that? Because they don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, you can say, but just shut up. Just be there.
Yeah.
And let your heart be there other than your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because sometimes they just don't need any more.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just need to dump it all out.
Yep.
And at that point, don't say anything. Go, okay, just be there and take it all. Could be anger. It could be frustration. It could be sadness. It could be happiness. It could be doubting. A lot, this brings out really raw emotions.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yep.
It's all right to say, my faith is dying. Okay. They're vocalizing it. That's a good thing.
Right.
It's when you keep it inside and let the grief consume you, then you walk into a danger zone. Because the dominoes can cascade and fall real quick when you get lost in the darkness.
Yeah.
But vocalizing is one of the best things. Is like, you shut up. Let them talk.
Right.
And let them, if they don't want to talk, then just sit in silence.
Yeah, because, and the other side of that is, if you listen long enough, that person that is grieving, you can, I'm not saying that you're going to, I'm not saying this is for everybody, but sometimes if you listen long enough, you can learn what it is that they're going to need that you can help them with.
Yep.
Not always, but a lot of times, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, grief changes you.
Yeah,
right.
It may be a little bit it to where you really don't notice. The person grieving, you just don't notice that they've changed, or it may change you a lot. Yeah. Dan says I'm a whole lot meaner than I used to be.
Yeah, she was mean before. Now she's just wickedly mean. And I call her on
my tolerance level.
It's not as good.
It's not near as good.
No. But she does call me on it.
I do.
So she's very good about it. Yeah. But yeah, grief changes you immensely.
Yep.
And it all depends on, you know, again, watching Kim go through this, how she's, because again, I wasn't, here's what I wasn't sure, and you're correct on that one. I did not know how this was going to change, or what, in what aspect was this going to change her? Because I saw this happen through the funeral home and different folks. I'm going, well, this, she could be the same person, or is it really good? What's it going to change her to be? In a sense, what changes are going to happen with this? Because it could happen. Mm-hmm. And then I had to figure out inside, how do I deal with that? Because I don't want to lose her.
Right.
And I have to let her go through that. But I also, I'm a partner. I'm a friend. So what can I do if she starts really going down the path of darkness? Mm-hmm. What do I do? And I was already prepped going, all right, what do I do? How do, because I've seen this, I've watched it, I've been in it. And in a sense, you just kind of learn. Now, she, you know, very strong. Again, she put all her energy towards the grandkids, and she still does. So that was her, I would call those, that was a safety net.
Yeah.
Probably. For her, it was her life jacket. Those kids have kept her. And the, and again, as we're walking through this, watching the kids, the eldest is so much like Lacey. And so we laugh, but then you can see a tear because they're going, oh my gosh, it's her. Yeah. I get faces and I'm going, oh my gosh, that's Lacey.
Her attitude.
Oh, her attitude. And her little smirks or whatever, going, oh my gosh. I'm Tora, said, you are, that is your mom. What you just did is your mom. Mm-hmm. So, and that brings a joy for me going, oh, I wish I had more of those times. And yeah. Then I even go, if I could have done this, should I have said something? Should I have done it? You still go through with it.
Yep.
But yeah, it all depends on how, on the other end of this, where you can put your energy to help navigate through this dark time. It's a brand new bizarre norm that you're in. How do you navigate that?
Mm-hmm. And I think the last thought that I would want to bring forward is that don't, for somebody who is watching somebody else grieve, in that instance, don't be afraid to mention the person who died or whatever. Don't be afraid to mention their name. Don't be afraid to mention memories. Don't be afraid to, because I think a lot of times, you know, you see somebody grieving and you go, oh man, if I start talking about this person, that they lost, then it's going to go and it's going to be bad and blah, blah, blah. No, you're bringing out memories, and these, don't be afraid to mention, because I think that's what a lot of people, at least in my experience with people who have dealt with death and the loss of a loved one, is they have really feared that the person that died will be forgotten. And it's not. That's not the case.
I mean, I don't know. We enjoy more of it. You know, you hit a moment and it's like, oh, geez, Lacey would have been all in that, you know? And or Lacey would have had something to say about this, you know? And mm-hmm. So... yeah, it's enjoying those moments.
Because everyone's afraid that, oh, if I say something, it's going to bring it all back.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean...
But it's really, it's not bringing it back, no. Because it's there anyway. It, you know, it never leaves you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That makes sense.
Yeah, it never leaves you. It never does. Life will, you know, life does move on. That's the problem. Life moves on. Do you? People say you need to move on. Well, life will do that for you. You know, life has no standing where everything stands still because of this. Mm-hmm. You know, work will continue. The sun's going to come up. The sun's going to go down. The cycle of life continues. That's what sucks.
Right.
Because that part of your life has now ended. With that person being there, but the memories, the joys, even the sorrow parts, are always there. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Sure.
It's okay to laugh, to cry, to get angry again. It's okay.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. At times it's like, bring them up. You know, don't be afraid to share, because that person's still actively, you know, alive in our memories. They're just not actively alive in life today.
Yeah.
And that's what hurts.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we do it all the time. We'll pull something out or have a game, or one of the kids will say something. I go, oh my gosh, yeah, there it is. and yeah, we're right back at it. And it helps. It's like a cut.
Right.
Death is a cut. Does it heal up? Yes. But is there a scar? Yes. That will never go away. There's always a living reminder that it's there. It's the same with death. I call it you get number as years go on. It's just you develop a scar. And it does heal, but it's always there.
Sure. Sure.
And just the same way, going, how'd you get that scar? Well, this. Well, tell me about your loved one. That usually brings healing, because then they're able to vocalize the fun, the joys, the hurt, the sadness. And that's okay.
Very
it's
true.
Okay.
Very, very true. Well, I think we've beat the grief thing. A little bit. We beat it down a little bit. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and I hope, you know, I just hope, you know, as we've done with our podcasts, it helps.
Yeah.
Whether you agree or disagree. And for us, you know, I hope maybe someone will respond back and go, yeah, I lost this. And this is how I got through it, or I'm still going through it. It's nice to hear the stories.
Oh, yeah.
That was my funnest part. My best part of going in when I was in with families is, tell me about this person.
Yes.
And I still remember. I mean, oh, Lord, I got stories I can go on with the folks that told me all about the person. I even have memories up in my room from real quick from a gentleman who his wife died, very much into Stephen King. And I'm a huge Stephen King. Him and I got in a big discussion. And then I find out she has all hardback Stephen King books.
Wow.
And I said, you're kidding. She goes, no, she has all hardback. I said, I would love to see him. He goes, okay. That next day, he brought them all over in a box. He says, I got to get rid of these. He goes, but I want them to go with someone who had as much love for him as she did. So I looked through the boxes, and there were some that were kind of collectible. Other ones were not. But she had every single Stephen King book hardback.
Wow.
And that's what I collect. Other than the collectibles. And I said, how about if I offer, you know, I'll buy it. He goes, that'd be awesome. Because he didn't want to just go down to the bookstore and get rid of them. He wanted someone to cherish her. So every time I bring these books out, I remember him and I remember his wife. And that's what he wanted.
Yep.
So I have a whole Stephen King book, every single one in hardback, because his wife had the same interest I was. Now, it probably drives my wife nuts.
In our bedroom.
Oh, huge, gigantic, just filled with Stephen King. And not just that, I had another family come in whose brother died. And find out he also was a Stephen King fan, and he had collectible books that were worth a whopping amount. And he says, you know, I don't want these. Just make me an offer. So I, as a result of that, getting to know his brother, he also had comic books, which I said, oh, my gosh, I don't want to deal with that. But I got to know these families and who this person was that died and their interest and who were they. That was my favorite part of listening to them tell and watching them laugh.
Yeah.
And then the tears.
Mm-hmm.
And then for them, it was healing. Because they were able to share the memories of what this guy was all about or this gal was all about. At least I got a little snapshot. I didn't know who the person was, but I got a little picture of this part of their life. And I was able to share it.
Yeah.
That's what people need, and that's why with grieving, it can become a very positive thing at the end, depending on whether you're willing to listen and allow them just to kind of share. So,
yep. Well, Kim, thanks for coming on this program.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, Dan, thanks for coming too, by the way. Sorry.
Wow. Yeah, whatever. It's always a joy.
It's a joy, always, dang it.
Always a joy.
Good deal. Oh. Well, we've been talking about some other topics that we'll bring on, so hopefully it won't be as long between episodes. We'll see what happens, though.
Yep.
But
that's true.
Until next time.
Did you enjoy today's episode? Why not subscribe to Espresso Coffee Talk? Stay in the know. Get some alerts when new episodes come out. Did you love today's episode? Why not send some love in return? Give me some stars in your podcast app. Leave me some comments. Let me know how I'm doing. Just please, please be gentle.